welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Folt. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us from Mercenary Musings World Headquarters in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Folt. Mickey, how was your Christmas?
It was quiet, but it was good.
Okay, great stuff. Good times up here. Mickey, another packed household. We've got a deep freeze settling in southern Ontario, though, and in fact, across much of Canada. The high in Toronto today, Mickey, get this, about minus 11 degrees Celsius. The low tonight, we're heading for a low of about minus 22 Celsius. It's a good thing you're down there in balmy New Mexico and not up here in Toronto.
Well, it has been balmy here. I think the high today was 12 or 13, something like that, and sunny, but get this, Rob, we're 80 days without measurable precipitation, honing in on the record since 1902.
Wow. Do you want to have that long of a stretch of just sunshine and no rain?
No,
I guess not. No.
No.
Okay. Well, not good for the commodities that you grow out of the ground, but we're not talking about those sort of commodities. We are going to focus, though, on the year in commodities in 2017. And you know what, Mickey? Equities grabbed a lot of the attention over the past 12 months, but it was a pretty decent year for the commodities trade, wasn't it? We'll talk about some of the individual metals and whatnot in a second here, but I wanted to point out off the top, the S&P Goldman Sachs Industrials Metals Total Return Index up about 24%, so that's a pretty good year.
Well, it almost is going to match the Dow return this year. Not quite, though. Mm-hmm. But, commodities did have a great year. Gold was up 12%. Silver underperformed up 5%. Palladium was the big winner, up a whopping 55% this year, setting near record highs set in February of 2001. I think with today's close at 10:54, only $45, something like that, off the all-time high. On the other hand, its sister metal, platinum, only returned 2% for the year. So that ratio, platinum to palladium, is way out of whack right now. Yeah. Copper up 30% for the year. Just goes on and on.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on the palladium performance, Mickey, off the top, because I believe this is the first time since 2001 that we have palladium being more expensive than platinum. So what was really driving the price?
Well, there was a short-term supply deficit, but more and more palladium acts as an industrial metal and not really a precious metal anymore. So catalytic converters is really what drives the market, and record auto sales in the U.S., record auto sales in China. I think probably what you will see if this platinum to palladium ratio is less than one for very long, you'll see people, OEMs, original equipment manufacturers, go back to platinum and catalytic converters, right, because it is much more efficient than palladium. It's just the price is has driven palladium use since the late 1990s.
Yeah, great point to bring up, Mickey, because I was also reading today that the World Platinum Investment Council has said that it has anecdotal evidence, in fact, that car makers are considering the switch from palladium to platinum in their catalytic converters because of the price movement that we've seen. So certainly that could be a fairly significant story to keep an eye on in 2018.
Oh, most definitely. And I think if this price stays out of whack like this, and the ratio right now is somewhere between 0.86 and 0.88, and that is an all-time low for that ratio. So, the cure for low prices is low prices, and it will take some doing to convert back to platinum. But if this stays out of whack very much longer, I think you're going to see that.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the performance for copper up about 30%, where it's near its highest level in almost 4 years, isn't it?
Yeah, since February of 2014, it closed today at 326. There's several things driving that market. Growing demand up Every year since 1900, the demand for copper has grown on average 3.4% a year. Strong Chinese and U.S. markets, world equity markets setting all-time records, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. So that is very bullish for economies growing forward. And then we have supply disruptions this year and coming in the year to come. Chinese are cracking down on wintertime pollution. They've shut two smelters over the last couple of weeks. So we've got Chile with 38 union strikes looming in 2018. New labor laws come into effect, socialistic labor laws in mid-July. So very bullish on copper going forward.
Yeah, the labor situation in the copper market, certainly one to focus on and keep a close watch on next year. I'm reading that Citibank is estimating there's almost 30 sets of labor contract negotiations that'll be taking place over the next 12 months. And those contracts...
That's 38, Rob.
38, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that and they potentially affect about 25% of the global copper supply. So this is going to be something to really stay on top of.
Yeah, and demand increasing. So it's seems to me that copper is very well set up for the next year going forward. But the industrial metals were up across the board. Zinc was at a 2-year high, or excuse me, 10-year high, up 28% over the year. Lead also up 28% for a 7-year high. Even uranium bopped up 16% over the last month and a half with some supply destruction coming in there. So it's really been across the board. Probably the underperformers for the year would be iron ore, minus 11% with an extremely volatile year. That's not a world exchange traded market, but extremely volatile. Started about $80 a ton, hit a high of 90. It's now hit a low of $55 mid Q2, and now trading about $70 a ton. And we talked about that, I think, in summer. And coking coal, also a very volatile year from Australia. We use Australian coking coal because that's what drives the steel industry in China. And that went from $80 at the beginning of the year to a high of $310 a ton, and an average of $185 a ton. So extremely volatile markets there.
Yeah. And moving a little bit further down the food chain, we've got cobalt and lithium, which are, of course, big ingredients in one of the hot topics of today, batteries used in electric vehicles. Lithium, I think, was up close to 40%. Cobalt prices, doubled, I think, over the past 12 months. So that is another area of the market that certainly got a lot of attention and will get even more attention, I would imagine, in the years ahead.
Yeah, I would think so. But I look at both those metals a bit of a bubble. I don't know if those sorts of returns are sustainable, especially in the cobalt market.
Okay, well, let's talk to the energy market, Mickey. Crude oil, you really have to look at the second half of the year to see the big pop higher in crude oil, because it wasn't doing a lot for the first 5-6 months or so, but I believe up about 40% since the middle of June. So we've got oil near its highest level in about 2.5 years. What's your assessment of the performance that we saw in crude?
Well, I'm overall bullish on crude oil. We have oil supply demand equation coming back into balance with OPEC cuts. You know, we started the year at 53.80 for WTI. We will finish the year, I guess I should say, probably around the $60 mark. Right now we're up 11% over the year, but we're using 1.5% more oil a year, and that demand's not going away. I think U.S. production is really the wild card. It's near an all-time high at 9.8 million barrels a day, approaching the monthly high in 1970 of 10 million barrels a day. But, this year we averaged just about the the record high average oil production. So it really is a story of U.S. shale projections going forward, close to 10 million barrels a day coming out of the U.S. What we've really seen is with this U.S. Production increase and the OPEC and Russian cuts is we've got this big spread with Brent and WTI mm-hmm. now well over $6, $6.50 or something like that, about 11% spread. And what's that's done really is increase U.S. exports, now over 2 million barrels a day. The U.S. is essentially energy neutral now. Mm-hmm. We produce as much as we use. We are now exporting a lot of natural gas through LNG. I think that's going to continue.
Yeah, the U.S. is really overwhelmed with its untapped natural gas reserves as well. And when you talk about natural gas, that was a commodity that really stagnated, didn't do a heck of a lot this year. And I don't know, it looks like we're going to end the year at its low point.
Yeah, I'm not really sure with this weather event going on in the northeastern tier of states and eastern Canada right now, but your point's well taken. Henry Hub gas, which is the North American benchmark, if you will, started the year at 380 a million BTU, closed today at 264 for a 30% loss over the year. But a lot of that's been driven lately by a very warm winter, and that's changing right now. So I would certainly expect that natural gas prices will recover fairly quickly because inventories are not anything out of the ordinary right now, and that market can be quite volatile. Going forward, I think American LNG looks very bullish. There's a pipeline going in from West Texas to South Texas to the refineries and the LNG facilities, export conversion and export facilities there. That will be online sometime within the next year, something like that. In the oil markets, there's probably only a couple of things that don't look particularly good right now. And in North America, that would be the oil sands. Canadian oil sands are a bit in a bad way. The Keystone Pipeline is once again in limbo. Yep. Because they've changed the route now, and it's going to throw that back into court. And the other thing that does not look very good right now, and we knew this was coming for a long time, and that's Venezuela.
Oh, geez, yeah.
The wonders of socialism have taken the country with the world's largest oil reserves, and production has fallen like a rock. It's defaulted and continues to default on its bonds. And I saw an article in mining.com today. No hay gasolina. There is no gasoline that you can buy in Venezuela right now because all two of their largest refineries have shut down. So they're producing something on the order of less than 20% of daily demand of gasoline. So that country is in a world of hurt.
Yeah, country on the brink. One final comment on natural gas. I should have been a little bit more bullish maybe in my comment to you, Mickey, because my furnace has been going nonstop here for about 2 days straight.
And
it'll
yeah,
probably be going nonstop for another week, a week straight too, according to the forecast. You mentioned the price performance overall on gold earlier, but we didn't really get into it a little bit. Should gold bugs be happy with how gold has traded this year? We're looking at an average price, I believe, for the year of about $1,268 an ounce. Right now, what are we, just sitting at just under $1,290. What are your thoughts?
Well, we had 12% return, which isn't bad. The low for gold was the first day of the year, and it's never dipped below that. We hit a high at 1346, I think, on September 8th. Really, what's happened is The gold has tracked the U.S. dollar for the most part. The day that Trump was elected, November 8th of 2016, to the day he was inaugurated on January 20th, there was a very high negative correlation of gold and the U.S. dollar. Then we went into about a 5.5 month lull when there wasn't a lot of movement in either of those two metrics, if you will. Right. And then again, from July 15th, probably kicked off with North Korea. I think Trump called him Rocket Man, and he responded back and called Trump the old dotard. but since those tweets went flying back and forth, geopolitical risk drove the market. What we do see is a seasonality from the end of a year until the end of February. On average, gold price is up 6 to 7% during those 2 months. I think my take on gold in 2018 is it's going to be very much dependent on the performance of the U.S. dollar, shy of some earth-shattering geopolitical event, and that looks like it could possibly come from North Korea. You know, a decent year for gold. Yep. Underperformed certainly the industrial metals, and I would dare say it will probably underperform the industrial metals in 2018. Not saying that it won't do very well, but you know, we got Trump coming up next with his infrastructure build out. Yep. Some of the Democrats have indicated that they will support infrastructure build out, and that is extremely bullish for the industrial metals.
And concerning gold, we'll also have to watch the U.S. Federal Reserve, because I think markets expecting, what, 3 rate hikes in 2018 from the Fed. Let's wrap it up on it.
Well, that's what the Fed's saying. I'm not sure markets expect it yet, but okay. Let's see what happens, okay. Rob.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up in the usual fashion. Mickey, a bit of a comment on the investing angle here, particularly in the junior area of the market where you like to focus. How would you sum up 2017 for opportunities that you found in the junior commodity players?
Well, I found significant new opportunities. I think I participated in 9 private placements over 2017. Almost all of those were in gold. I did 1 in copper, I did 1 in zinc, and all the other ones were in gold. And I really think what happened in 2017 is that the metals got ahead of the equities. So we did not see good returns on the gold miners. They underperformed compared to the price of gold in 2017. And I dare say that the explorers, for the most part, underperformed too. Now, there were some that, as is usual with the market, some stories went flying off the shelf. But what I saw in 2017 was opportunities in new gold startups, and that's where most of my money went. And most of those were in the U.S., a couple in Canada, I think one in Brazil, one in Mexico. But really, it was a year of focusing on gold and focusing on projects in geopolitical stable countries in the world. For me, that's pretty much North America.
We'll end it there, Mickey. We'll reconnect in about a month's time for the first show of 2018. So we'll speak to you in about 4 weeks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. You can also hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.